This is The Pulse. I'm Mike and Scott. You can find our podcast on iTunes. Our relationship with animals is, as we say on Facebook, complicated. That's an understatement. Humans love animals. We drop big bucks on those we keep as pets. We eat animals. We make them work for us. We protect them and hunt them. We step on some of them without thinking twice while considering granting basic human rights to others. So on today's show, we're going to explore the many layers and facets of this relationship. Let's start with love. Not just any love, but fierce love. His name is Spartacus. It's undoubtedly an ironic choice because he's a skinny little thing with short white fur and a ton of energy. He's part Chihuahua, part Terrier, but he's not a barker. Spartacus is a bit of a celebrity in his South Philadelphia neighborhood. So when he goes out for a walk, he's gonna look sharp.
All right, mister, we're gonna put your sweater on. This is the newest thing. I bought it 2 days ago.
Gita Kurtz has picked a light blue sweater out of an entire drawer filled with dog clothes. This one has an argyle pattern. Think Ivy League ski club outing. Next, she fixes the hair on his head.
And not to forget the mohawk that's made you famous.
Yep, Spartacus has a tiny mohawk.
He's had, an orange dye, a green dye, a blue dye, and then we decided to go with purple this year.
And does he like that?
He does, because everybody says, oh, he's so cute, so he just poses and gets all excited.
Gita Kurtz and Spartacus make for a fetching couple. She's wearing a miniskirt, polka dot tights, and boots. Her black hair is braided in pigtails. Neighbors wave and make small talk as we walk to an upscale pet store called Doggy Style. This is where Kurtz works, but today she's just there to buy Spartacus a new sweater.
Don't yell at me for it.
She's talking to one of the clerks. He has made a deal with her husband, Kyle, to alert him when she's buying more stuff.
The other one. No, Kyle doesn't know.
Kurt says she knows Spartacus is spoiled and that she's spending way too much money on him. He has 4 beds, he eats top-of-the-line expensive raw food with duck and venison, but she feels it's only right because they have a special bond, one that started the second she saw him at a shelter.
And as I walked in, there was this ugly-looking thing, not even a pound, and I'm like, that's my son. So, we're very happy.
Your son, I ask? I mean, he's a dog, right?
We know he's a dog, but he's the best dog. He's our kid.
Kurtz analyzes the dog's reactions to every purchase, how he likes or dislikes a certain sweater or a new bed. When she forgets to thaw out his special raw food, she knows Spartacus is disappointed.
He gives me this look.
What's the look?
He's like, really, Mom? Really?
He calls you Mom.
Yeah, I could see it. You know, he just blinks at me. I'm like, okay, he's giving me the really Mom look.
I should probably admit here that this notion is completely foreign to me. I don't have pets. I like animals just fine, but I don't see them as being like me. So this is all very intriguing to me. I go on to meet Jennifer Augustine and her 2 pugs.
Max is 14 and Frankie is 11. I'd hate to say this, but Max is pretty much my soulmate dog.
She says with Max, it was love at first sight.
He's amazing. He's cocky, which I love. He's independent like me, which I love. It's a connection. He is like the dog version of me.
She loves Max so much, she has his pug face tattooed on her forearm. And sometimes she's worried that Frankie, the other pug, feels slighted.
Frankie and my husband are more connected. They have more of the bond that Max and I have. Because Chris, my husband, and Frankie are very similar people.
Do you think of them as people?
Oh, goodness. I believe I do. I do. It's funny because, yeah, if someone says, do you have any children, and I'll say my pugs, Max and Frankie.
It's very easy for us to perceive minds in others. So when things look like us and when things make noise, when we interact with them, when they squeal or purr or bark, right? All those cues, I mean, animals don't have language, but they have something close. And those cues compel us to see minds in creatures.
This is Kurt Gray. He is a psychology and neuroscience professor at UNC Chapel Hill, and he studies why people anthropomorphize, meaning perceive a human-like mind in a non-human agent. And he says, yes, of course, pets have minds, and they experience basic emotions like joy or fear, but not the kinds of complicated feelings we often give them credit for.
Those of us who have pets as children, I think we vastly overestimate the amount of mind they have. So people think that their dog has this like rich emotional life and can feel embarrassment and Schadenfreude and nostalgia. And I'm not sure their neural architecture supports that.
Gray has two cats. One is named Chaz, and Chaz has an evil streak at times. I know this because he told me that he and his wife spent a lot of time discussing their cats' personalities. And do you ever check yourself, given your line of work, do you ever, you know, when you go down that path of what is the cat thinking right now, do you ever just think, okay, stop, the cat is not thinking about that?
Yeah, I think my wife is also a neuroscientist, and we have conversations where we stop ourselves and say, let's really consider the neural architecture of our cats. I think we're giving them too much credit. But then at the end of the day, right, we sing them songs and we snuggle them, so maybe actions speak louder than words.
What do you sing to your cats?
Well, I think maybe my wife doesn't want me letting this out, but we often dance at them during the intro music to TV shows. So the show The Americans has this amazing kind of Russian Cossack music, and so we do like Cossack dances towards Chaz as he's sitting on the couch. He's pretty stoic, so it's all right, but I feel like a fool when I do it, but it's still fun.
So the cats don't truly appreciate your efforts.
Well, they don't not appreciate it. And I think the beautiful thing about perceiving minds is there's enough ambiguity that we can just pretend that Chaz likes us dancing at him.
So two neuroscientists doing a Russian dance at their cats while being aware of the irony of the situation, somewhat. So it seems like we just can't help ourselves. When we spend a lot of time with a pet, are we going to perceive a mind just like ours? New brain science points in that direction, says Nicholas Epley. He studies behavioral science at the University of Chicago.
The same neural systems that are involved in thinking about whether somebody else is lying or telling the truth are also the same kinds of neural systems that are involved in thinking about whether your pet has a guilty look or not.
Epley says we often have viewed anthropomorphism as a human weakness.
But to the extent that that process is the same thing that allows me to recognize that my wife of 20 years loves me, it really suggests a very different kind of understanding of this, that this, I think, reflects a signature strength of our brains. The most amazing thing your brain is able to do is to connect to the mind of another agent, to understand other people. And I think this is a natural outcropping of that.
And just like with the rest of our emotions, love or dislike for fellow humans, anthropomorphism is selective. Which creatures we anthropomorphize depends on different factors. Here's Kurt Gray again.
Cuteness factors into a lot of our decisions about animal morality. So crows, for instance, are very smart. They can understand physics problems that some children can't figure out.
But crows are not that cute. They are not cuddly, and they destroy our crops. So we don't buy them sweaters, we make scarecrows. Where and how we grow up also plays a role, says Gray.
If you work on a farm and you see animals as there to do labor, so cats are there to eat mice and dogs are there to protect your property, then you have a very different perception of animal morality than if you just live in Manhattan and you have a little frou-frou dog and she's your constant companion and you put her in a bag and you take her to Louis Vuitton, etc. So I think it's in some sense giving animals mind is a privilege that we have in our society when, you know, we're wealthy and we can just enjoy them instead of making them work.
Americans spent more than $60 billion on their pets in 2015. And the more we love them and perceive them as human-like, the more money we're going to drop on them. If you look at pet food commercials, there's a conscious effort to highlight things like love, loyalty, special relationships, unbreakable bonds.
Rocky had no idea why Don was gone for so long, but he'd wait for her forever. for any reason, and would always be there with the biggest welcome home.
Right now, research on anthropomorphism is growing, and it goes beyond our pets. Anthropomorphizing means attributing a human mind to a non-human agent, and that can be anything, a cat, a dog, or a tree, a bicycle. And with artificial intelligence gaining momentum, there is a lot of interest in the interactions between people and computers. Nicholas Epley recently ventured into new territories for anthropomorphism.
How do you get somebody to turn their life over to a stupid car?
By stupid car, he means a super high-tech self-driving vehicle. Epley just finished up a research project for General Motors. He studied what would get people over their fears with these cars. And it turns out that people are more trusting when they perceive the car to have a mind.
So when we gave an autonomous vehicle, a car, a voice, it talked to you. It responded to your actions. It told you what was coming ahead and what was happening around it, so it seemed better able to sense what was going on. People felt more comfortable driving in the simulator, and they were more likely to trust the vehicle to drive them safely.
Humans long for connection. It's what makes us human. Only when we feel a connection can we develop trust or begin a relationship. And given that the only frame of reference we have is our human mind, it's no wonder that that's what we perceive in animals we spend a lot of time with. And there's something else. So many people I talked to mentioned the unconditional, non-judgmental nature of their pet relationships. Gita Kurtz told me that she knows Spartacus isn't thinking what she thinks he's thinking, but it's so nice to imagine. So when she buys him a sweater and she thinks that he likes it, there's no negative feedback. It makes her happy to think that he's happy.
Just a dream come true.